Welcome to the Lights Out Podcast. This is Chris Lights Out Lytle, and this is our journey to document the history of mixed martial arts. I have brought with me my friend, the MMA detective Mike Davis, and together we will preserve the history and hear some great stories from the world in the era of the no holds barred. Thank you and enjoy.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Lights Out Podcast. The no holds barred era is something that is incredibly important to us. The stories, the culture, as well as the people that were involved. This gentleman right here, Professor Wander Braga. Thank you. I appreciate you joining the podcast.
Thank you, man. Thank you. Appreciate you. Thank you. What's up, everyone? So,
this is how we usually start things out. I mean, obviously, you're a legend within the sport. You're a very established school. When I talk to people that have experienced your teaching, all of them talk about your seminars and just how next level they are. But let's start with your beginnings. Where does your beginnings in jiu-jitsu and mixed martial arts start?
Well, I always liked martial arts, you know. I was a fan of like martial arts moves, you know. I always had these in my blood, and I used to get in trouble a lot in the streets in Rio. And I started actually like in karate when I was like 8 years old. From 8 to 10 years old, I did some karate, you know. But then at the age of 12 years old, my mom moved from Barra da Tijuca, you know. And it's a funny story too, because she put me in a school, you know. And some of like my friends, they do jiu-jitsu. They used to do jiu-jitsu, you know, and I didn't know what jiu-jitsu was. And I got in a fight in a school. And I was like beating the kids up, you know, like karate style, kicking and everything. And suddenly like the kid took me down and I was on the bottom. I didn't know what to do it, you know. Some of my friends went in and they pushed us apart, you know, and some like Gordinho, Rafael Gordinho, you know, Gordo's brother, you know, he came to me and says, "Hey, buddy, you know, you good stand up, but you don't know shit on the floor, man. You got to do some jiu-jitsu." And I'm like, what is that?
Hold up. How old were you at this time?
I was 12 years old.
So at 12 years old, you had your first jiu-jitsu talk.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
Everybody gets it. Lesson. Everybody gets the jiu-jitsu talk.
And I'm glad they push us apart, you know, because I was gonna get my ass kicked, man. You know? So then, you know, I'm glad Gordinho was, you know, introduced me to jiu-jitsu. And I fell in love with when I was 12 years old. You know, I did few classes at the Grace Academy. It was a Grace Academy. It was in Barra da Tijuca. It was a house where all the Gracies used to train, you know, all my friends Grace, from Barra.
Which Gracies in particular were there at that
time? You mean, I see it, Hickson Gracie teaching there, you know, and he had a ponytail, you know, but like Hickson was like, you know what I mean? Like we used to do the kids class, you know? And I believe, I'm not sure, but I believe Hanzo Grace was a purple belt that time. Half Grace, blue belt. Half Grace used to teach a class for us, you know? And hold on one second. Somebody's calling me. I don't know how
you're
to
good.
Take that
You off. Can see. It's okay. Keep going. We're listening.
So, but my first instructor that time for a month or two was Higan Machado. Man, Higan used to train there. My coach, George Pereira, used to train there. You know, so a lot of big names, man. They used to do the adult class, right?
All-star names.
Yes. Jean-Jacques Machado. All those guys, they trained there together, you know? And I believe that time, everyone started, like, moving to California. You know, and then, like, I remember Higan was teaching, and Higan gave me my yellow belt.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. And Higan moved, and then it was, like, many other teachers, you know. And then, like, I remember there's, like, you know, many different coaches. And then I say, man, I need to stop. I need to have one coach, you know. And some of my friends on the street, they used to train with George. And they say, man, why don't you try, you know, come to George, see how it is, you know. And I knew that George was George Pereira.
Okay, there we go. Mm-hmm.
And then Master George used to train over there too. And I see him. I see the way he trains. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to give it a try. So I went to George. And my first class with George was like, you know, like a MMA on the first day. And I love it. Like, you know, fist fight and everything, you know. So I fall in love with. I remember the first day that George, like, you know, like, it was my first day there, man. So I didn't know. I was a yellow belt. So he did, like, a lot of self-defense, warm-ups, and training. And at the end, he says, hey, boy, you know how to punch? And I'm like, you know, ah, of course I know, master, you know? He's like, okay, put these gloves on. And I'm like, okay, what am I going to do it? He's like, man, you're going to try to punch and kick the shit off all these purple belts here. You know? And I love it, you know, like, yeah. I was 12 years old, 13 years old, you know, put the gloves on, I can try to beat some purple belts, you know, some old guys. I'm like, all right, I'm going to do this, you know. But again, I got my ass kicked, you know. They took me down, they slapped my face, you know. But I love that kind of training, you know. And I fell in love with George right away, man.
So George is one of Hickson's black belts, Hickson Gracie's black belts. Absolute legend within the sport. And when did you know that you were going to fight mixed martial arts?
Well, Georgia has this samurai mentality of, like, if you get in trouble in the street or something, we take care inside the academy, right? So every time there is, like, a problem, a trouble in the street, you know, and he used to say, okay, we're going to visit that guy's academy. We're going to knock the door and says, look, he had some trouble here. These guys need to fight. You know, and after I had my first fight, which was a crazy fight, you know, we can talk about that. At the age of, I think I was 16 years old. And after that, I was like, well, I like this. You know what I mean? Like, I don't like only the jiu-jitsu competition. I like to, like, fight, you know what I mean? Like,
so out of all of the names that you had mentioned, it seemed like there was two paths. Either they were going to go the competitive jiu-jitsu route and really dedicate themselves to it,
which I did a lot, which I compete a lot. Yeah. Yellow belt, orange belt, you know, green belt, blue belt. I compete in all belts, you know, and I love it. You know, but something about the Vale Tudo, the MMA, you know, something about representing jiu-jitsu against other martial arts was strong in my blood. You know what I mean?
So people either went the hardcore jiu-jitsu tournament route, they went in between, or they really dedicated themselves to the NHB era.
Yes. And I believe I dedicate myself a lot to the NHB era. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah. You say you believe you've dedicated yourself. Uh-huh. So let's put this into context. November 11th, 1993 was UFC 1.
Uh-huh.
Okay. April 10th, 1994, you enter into a freestyle fight circuit, an 8-man no-holds-barred tournament in Sao Paulo.
Yes.
So less than a year.
I'm glad you got the dates, though, because I'm really bad with the dates.
So less than a year from the inception of what this crazy sport was. And let's keep in mind, UFC 1, it was like an eye-opening for everybody to understand what jiu-jitsu was.
Uh-huh.
But UFC 2 was one of the most violent spectacles of no-holds-barred ever. Like, it was absolutely crazy. And you are how old at this time?
I believe I was 18.
So as a young 18-year-old, you say,
yeah,
I have found my some calling.
I don't know. I'm really bad with dates and like I said, you know what I mean? Well, some of my friends say I was 17, but no, I think I was 18, from 18 years old, yeah.
So we have different boxes that we check on this podcast.
Uh-huh.
When you start your career in a tournament, man, that's old school. Like, it's official. You're an old school guy. Now, never mind the year. So you go in. Do you remember your first tournament?
I do. I do. As a yellow belt. Yes, I do.
No, remember this NHB on 94.
Oh, no, the NHB? The yes. NHB?
April 10th, yes, 1994.
I remember. I was surfing at the beach, you know, and some of my friends, I was getting off the water, you know, and I see some of my friends, they park in front of like, we have like a place that people buy food and everything, you know, that's what like our, you know, brotherhood place, you know. So I got out there. And I see Leo Dalla, my partner trainer, you know, Nairton, which is my brother, and Rodrigo, some other guys, you know, like they say, look, we're going to see George fight in São Paulo. And I'm like, man, I wish I could go. It's like, what do you mean, man? Let's go. And I'm like, man, I don't have the money to go. You know what I mean? I know it's like Rio, São Paulo, you have to pay gas, you have to pay food. All that. And I was like, man, I don't want to spend money right now. And I don't even have money to get in. And then my friends were like, hey, man, are you stupid, man? Come on inside. Let's go, man. We'll go with you, you know? And I'm like, all right, great. Let me go home so I can change it. And they're like, man, Vander, we have no time. You leave the board here. Otherwise, we're not going to see George fight. And I'm like, okay, so I left the board over there. I talked to other friends and say, hey, guys, take care of my board, you know? And I told my friends, hey, man, I don't have a shirt. It's like, oh, I have a shirt inside my car. I'm like, okay. So I went inside the car. We drove like 6 hours. You know, we stopped one time to eat. And I ate some McDonald's, you know? And we get there. You know, old school, man. We're pushing in line and say, okay, we're not going to pay with George students. We're here to help George. Next time I see it, I'm like inside the stadium with like, I believe it was 10,000 people, right? So I'm sitting at the bleachers there, looking. Then I see George coming, looking at the guys, you know, and then everybody starts to wave, hey, George, we're here. And then he's like, hey, Vander, come down here. And I'm like, man, George is calling me, you know? So I came down there. There's like the bleachers there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
There's a fence right there. And then I grabbed the fence. He's like, how much you weigh? And I'm like, I don't know. Maybe 74, 73. You know, I think kilos probably was like 165, right? 168. I don't know. And then he says, oh, can you lose 8 pounds now? And I'm like, but what are you talking about? He's like, can you lose? No, come on. And then I jump. You know, because once George says, come on in, I'm like, man, I'm going to be watching the fight right here, right? So, and then he's like pushing me, you know, the security came. He's like, no, he's going to fight. And I'm hearing that thing, like, he's going to fight. And I'm like, okay, he's probably lying so I can get inside, right? So I got there, and then he looks at the organizers and says, okay, I found a guy for you guys. And I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, man, start losing weight. And next time I see, I'm losing weight, man. You know? And then I'm doing my best to lose weight. And then, okay, you got to wait in, man. You got to wait in. I'm like, man, I'm fighting. And I'm, in my head, it's like, I have no doubts about it. I knew it, I was going to fight, you know, but you know how it is, you know? And then I weighed in. I think I was 1 pound over. You know, something like that, or less than a pound, you know, and the owners, the organizers were like, oh, no, he needs to lose more. And George and George Patino Macaco, you know Macaco, right?
A legend. Yeah. Legend. Charles Oliveira's coach, Macaco. Yes. He's got a very big gym in Texas. I heard he's now back in Brazil. I have sent him a dozen messages begging him to come on, but he hasn't read them yet. But go ahead. Yes, I know McConkie.
So he was there, George, you know, and there's like McConkie start to like talk to the guys. Hey man, he's saving the 70 kilos division, the 155 division. You know, he's not even a pound over. And he just came out here, man. You know, come on, guys, you know. And there's like, oh, McConkie, but 1 pound is too much. And then I look at the guys, I say, okay, I'm going to try to lose a little bit more and I'll be right back. So give me just 10 more minutes. So I went out and I started working out again. I came back. I was like half pound over still, you know, and then they pushed me inside the scale, you know, and the scale was like a little bit over, you know, and then McConkie says, McConkie and George are like, come on, man, you know, he's ready to fight. Come on, let's go. Let's go. And then next time I see it, I'm inside the ring. It was a boxing ring. Like a lot of people screaming. I look at where my friends were, and my friends are like putting their hands on them, like, what the fuck, man, you know? And I'm like looking at my opponent, look at George, look at him like,
man, how did I get here? How did I get here?
You know? And the funny story was my first fight was against a boxer, you know? He was a blue belt in jiu-jitsu.
Okay, so you're talking about Ariel Barbadade?
I think so. I'm not sure. Here,
let me give you the three names because sometimes they have them in reverse. I got George Boxer, Tadeo Amador, and Ariel Barbadade. It's Ariel Barbadade is your first opponent. Tadeo Amador is your second. And they say you met George Boxer in the finals. It could be reversed.
Yeah, I'm not sure, man. I'm really not sure, you know. Like, then I remember, like, he tried an uppercut, and I went down, and I grabbed, and I put him down, side control. And then it was too slippery, you know, and I see it that my knees were, like, scratching, you know. Like, it was, you know, I tried to control him. And we were like sliding a little bit, you know, I could like really hold him. So I decided to start doing some knees. You know, I say, man, I'm not going to mount because my knee's hurting right now. It was something was like, you know, like when you have some.
Mat burn.
Yeah, it's mat burns. It was worse. And I didn't know why. And then suddenly the referee says, okay, stop it. Stop the fight. You know, and they say, okay, you go over there. You go over here. Hold on 1 second. And then he went to talk to some organizers. They came back with a sweeper. You know, they start pushing. There is like a lot of sand inside the mat. So the funny part was I was surfing, man. I have a lot of sand in my pocket. The sand was coming out when I was fighting.
My God.
That was my half pound over. I didn't know I have the sand. You know what I mean? On my pocket. So when I put my hand on my pocket, I say, George, that is sand on the mat. I think it's from my pocket. And George says, don't say nothing, man. Now just go there and kick his ass, you know? So they have to sweep. Oh, and by the way, before the fight starts, they ask me, do you have a mouthpiece? And I say, no, I don't. Do you have a groin protector? I'm like, no, I don't. I don't have nothing. You know, and then the referee says, oh, he cannot fight. He doesn't have a mouthpiece. And then they brought like a mouthpiece from somebody. Oh, you got to use this. I'm like, oh, hell no. I'm not using that. You know, so you got to fight, but you got to use the mouthpiece. I'm like, guys, I was at the beach. I'm here to help the, you know what I mean? I don't have a mouthpiece. I don't have a groin protector. I don't have nothing. I just want to go there and fight. If you guys don't want me to fight, I'm out of here. You know, and George is like, don't worry about it. He's not going to get punched, you know? And I'm like, man, if I get punched on my teeth, I'm losing my teeth. You know what I mean? Like, so, yes, that's it. You know, and then I went out there and I won 3 fights one night. And I became a champion.
Let's talk about this. You win by knockout, by rear naked choke, and by armbar. So you've got 3 fights, 3 finishes at an event you were not supposed to be at.
Yes. Yes. Yep. I'm very proud of myself on this, man.
So when you get home and you tell your parents what just happened,
that's the second story, man. So a week after, we're having dinner in a barbecue place in Rio de Janeiro, right? And long time ago, those MMA fights was to be like recorded, and they will pass like a week after on Sport TV in Brazil, which was like a very good channel, right? And we at the restaurant eating, my grandma, my mom, you know, my cousins, everybody. And I, the TV is back here. My grandma is in front of me, and then she starts shaking, you know, look at the TV, and I'm like, I hope that's not my fight. You know what I mean? And then my mom is like, what is that? You know, what are you doing? Is that you? I look back and I'm like, no, that's a guy that looks
wasn't
like
me. Wasn't me.
Not me. You know? And
surfing.
Then at the end, they put
surfing.
It like, champion, Wander Braga, you know? And I'm like, mom, they're using my name. You know what I mean?
That's,
she says, you're not fighting jiu-jitsu no more. I'm going to call George. You're going to be out of that. You know, you're not doing jiu-jitsu, you know. Look at your ears, you know. And I'm like, mom, relax, you know. I have under control. Everything's under control. She's like, do you have nothing under control?
Yeah. Mom, this is all George's fault. It's not my fault, but I'm going to still hang out with him. Everything is okay. Yeah. Everything is okay. Yeah. the ride home must have been fantastic, too, with your friends.
Oh, man. Man,
yeah,
the ride home was great, man. Some of my friends are like, man, do you have any idea what you just did? You know, and I was like, yeah, we have a saying in Brazil, like, I don't know how can I explain that. You know, like, you know, when you really know you did, but you didn't realize yet. So I was like that, you know, the whole way back. I was like, man, I just won an MMA fight, you know, not MMA, a Vale Tudo fight, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And as a purple belt, I was a purple belt, you know. Yes. It was something rare because like that time only like black belt fight, right? And by the way, jiu-jitsu guys, they always fight in a speedo, right? And I was the first jiu-jitsu guy to fight in shorts. Yes. I tell this to everyone, you know, and everybody laughed at me. But before, jiu-jitsu guys, they only wear speedos. They have their hands like this. You know what I mean? Like,
so there's, you know, no sand. There's no sand that's in the ring. Right. That's why they only wear speedos.
Yes.
Well, I cut you off in regards to your first tournament. It sounded like there was a good story there. You had said as a yellow belt was your first competition. So please, sir.
As a jiu-jitsu, yes. I remember like I went to, it's a condominium that we have in Brazil, Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. First cup of Novo Leblon. I had three fights as a yellow belt. And that time, man, it was hard to find, like, kids at your age or kids at your weight division. So they start to put everyone together, you know what I mean? So I fought, like, one guy smaller than me and two guys bigger than me. And I beat them. It was, like, a very good feeling, you know? That was when I first said, you know what, man? I want to keep doing this. I love it, you know. But it was like I had a war. I have a war with a big guy at the end, man. It was a hard fight. But I remember he got mad, you know. So I beat him and he got really mad because he was saying, you know, 12 years old, you know, he was saying, I'm going to smash you, little boy. I'm going to smash you, you know. And I was like, okay, man, bring it on, you know. But I was like worried because he was a little bit bigger. You know what I mean? I was like, man, you know, I can play on the ball of this guy. He's going to smash me, you know?
Right.
But I had George, man. George was like, great, man. George was always a great coach, you know? He's still a great coach.
I don't think he's as appreciated as he should be as a coach.
Same thing. I said, I just had a conversation with him last night, you know, and we talk about that a lot, you know? A lot of magazines in Brazil, they they give for like a lot of guys, which is okay. You know, I'm not saying they don't deserve it, you know, but they don't appreciate what George did, what I did. You know what I mean?
I know the roots of the tree.
I never did this to be in a magazine or to, you know what I'm saying? I'm not worried about that, you know, but I agree with you. It's like, you know, George should be more appreciated for what he did. I should be more appreciated, you know. They did some books in Brazil about Vale Tudo. They never mentioned me. They never mentioned George. You know what I mean? They mentioned guys that has less fight than us. And again, I'm not saying they don't deserve it. They do deserve it, you know.
But there should be more. Yeah, that's why I exist. To be honest with you, like Murilo Bustamante was our last guy that we just dropped. This will probably be about a month later. Like, you guys are like, you guys should be the household names that the people talk about that are working out today. Like, you guys really should. And the stories that you guys have, they're going to get lost unless they're recorded. They need to be documented.
You're right. And I appreciate, man, you are doing this. Yeah. You know,
it's what's supposed to happen.
It's great, man, you know. I really do. That's why when people call me to do a podcast and everything, I really appreciate because, you know, we need this. Not just me, some other guys, everyone need it.
Everybody. You know what I mean? Everybody. Yeah. And you know, let's look at some of the names that you've trained with. Like you've trained with Hicks and Gracie, Leo Dalla, Paulo Giobel. Like you these are all old school names. Fabiano Iha, another one.
Yeah.
Why don't you give us, like, we just mentioned a few names. Would you mind, do you recall any, like, good stories with Leo or Paulo or Ray Diego?
Man, I have so many stories, you know, that I can tell you. Leo Dalla, man, he's still one of my idols. You know what I mean? Yeah, it's because he was a partner trainer. He was always ahead of me. You know, when I was a purple belt, he was a brown belt. When I became a brown belt, he was a black belt, you know? And that guy, man, he didn't care. He would fight anyone, you know? He was, let's say he was 19, fighting guys from Carson Gracie, you know, Zé Mario. You know, he fought the Baiano guy, Baiano from, you know, Carson. It was like, everybody was, man, Baiano is tough. Leo Dalla was there at age of like 18, 19 years old, you know, having wars with those guys. And I believe he was the heaviest guy you have at the academy. And he was like maybe 175, 180 pounds, you know. And I always see it, Leo Dalla is the, you know, the guy over there, you know what I'm saying? Right after that, we had Nino. Nino was a blue belt from George.
He's about Nino Chambry?
Nino Chambry, yes.
I've tried to get him too, man. He's in California now. Nino Chambry's a savage.
I'm gonna see him next week. I can talk to him.
Oh, man, bro.
Yes. We'll talk. We'll talk.
Good, I'll
talk to him. I'll give you a call when I'm with him.
Good.
Perfect. You know? So Leo Dalla, man. Leo Dalla was, for me, one of the top guys that I, you know, like, I always look and I say, man, the day I had, like, and I still don't know if he was training hard with me or not, or if he let me go a little bit, you know, but Leo Dalla, I always kick my ass at the academy, you know, and yeah, you know, true. I was lighter than him, you know, he was more graduate than me, you know, he was advanced and everything, an idol, you know what I mean? But I remember one day that we trained for like 20 minutes, man. It was hard training, straight 20 minutes, me and him. And I did really good. I didn't tap him. He didn't tap me, you know, but I still remember that was the day that I thought it was like, okay, man, you know, like, and after the train, he looks at me and says, hey, Vandinho, you know, he talks like this, hey, Vandinho, today you had a good train with me, man. I still don't know if he was like light with me, you know, I wasn't light. I was training hard, you know what I mean? But I remember that day, man. That from that day on, I say, man, I think I'm better now.
That's good. That's good. Yeah. You also trained with the Raw team, the Real American Wrestling team.
Great trainings, man. Great trainings. Yeah, on the Raw team, we have Frank Trix, Rico Ciparelli, who used to be the one pushing the training there, Lyoto Machida. Dan Henderson was there for a little bit, and then he moved. Randy Couture was there, and then he moved. Man, we have Valide Ismail. He was there too.
Matt Yushchenko was there as well.
Yes, man. I remember one day I trained with Matt Yushchenko. He was big, huge, you know, and he pulls guard. You know, like he didn't know me. He pulls guard, and I did like a cartwheel pass. And after that, he was like, "Oh, fuck that!" He grabbed my leg. He put me down, and he hold one hand. He hold my both arms, and he keep holding his leg. Hey, boy, stop moving like that, you know? And I was like, okay, man, let go of my arm. Let go of my arm. You know what I mean? Like, he was really strong, really good. And I learned a lot with those guys, man.
So it was also kind of controversial for you to be there as a Brazilian.
Yeah.
Because Rico Ciparelli cornered Tom Erickson in the Mars event when Erickson fought Bustamante. And Bustamante, it was a draw after 20 minutes. But afterward, Henzo threw Ciaparelli out of Henzo Gracie.
Yes.
And you still went and trained with them.
Still. I need train, man. I need to, like, I used to go visit some academies, you know, but I didn't feel I was part of something, right? And George was in Miami. So I first talked to George about that, and George was like, "Vander, you gotta do whatever you have to do it to get better." You know what I mean?
So if you needed to feel the wrestler, you needed to feel the wrestler pressure.
And I need to learn some wrestling. I need to, yes, of course, you know. And like, once George told me, like, "Man,
who cares? You're great,
do whatever you cares." You know what I mean? So go ahead and do it. You know, and George was fighting that time too, still. You know, so he says, "Hey, tell the guys that pretty soon I'm going to be there in California and I'm going to spar with you guys." I'm like, "Great, master, great," you know? And he did.
Wow.
He came after, he was sparring with us, and he trained. He stays in my house, George, that time. He stays in my house for like 2 or 3 months. Great training, you know?
That's incredible. So you'd mentioned Vladimir Matyushchenko. He's a California guy now. Just so everybody could understand how good of a wrestler Vlad Matyushchenko was, his senior year of high school, he's got a win over Kevin Jackson and Dave Schultz, two Olympic gold medalists. Senior year of high school, he beat those two.
Yes.
So, like, you can't get a better opportunity for wrestling.
Man, Frank Triggs, man. Oh, my God. That guy was stronger. You know, he helps me a lot with my wrestling, you know. I help him a lot. We help each other, you know. When he fought Matt Hughes, I was with him training every day, you know.
Really?
Yes. And man, I was with the Raw team for a long time. They accept me. They opened the doors really well for me. I love Rico. You know, he was a great guy, man. And he was always nice with me, always welcoming. You know what I mean? Like, really good, man. Really good, you know?
That's good,
like,
stuff.
It's good you say it because, you know, a long time ago when I was in Rio and I did my first fight, right after, I said, "Man, I need to start my stand-up a little bit." And jiu-jitsu guys on that time, they didn't train Muay Thai. It was a war between jiu-jitsu, Muay Thai, luta livre, all that stuff, right? And I went to my coach, which is my coach, Muay Thai coach, you know, Claudio Wagner, you know. Wagner Coelho, man, he was first. Wagner, he opens the door for me. He says, "Yo, man, we need you in here," you know. And I say, "Wagner, you know I'm a jiu-jitsu guy. I don't want to walk in here and have the feeling that I have to, like, do a Vale Tudo fight every day. I'm here to learn," right? And he's like, "Man, don't worry about it. You're going to learn, you know?" And then I start doing Muay Thai with Wagner, Master Wagner, you know? And boom, that's it.
That's wild.
That time was hard too because George didn't like much the Muay Thai guys, you know, and George has that mentality of like, man, we don't need that. We need jiu-jitsu, you know? But
jiu-jitsu then, like here, what do you think about jiu-jitsu then as compared to jiu-jitsu today?
Well, I'll say that, you know, like, jiu-jitsu evolved a lot, right? In a competition way, yeah, jiu-jitsu did evolve, man, a lot. You know, like, I see it, the guys doing, like, a lot of stuff on these days, you know?
It's not self-defense anymore.
I can do it, but I'll be, like, hurting something here, there, you know what I mean? Like, but, man, like, you know, I don't say that jiu-jitsu, what I say is the athlete part, that time from this time now is different. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
If I knew it that time, what I know now would be much different too, right? What I know is that when I notice that's like, man, if I had hard time to take someone down, which could happen to you know, because everybody on the other side was learning some jiu-jitsu too, you know, and I say, look, man, I need to have my hands sharp, and I don't have my hands sharp. You know what I mean? So, yeah. but jiu-jitsu is always jiu-jitsu, man. You know?
Right.
No matter what, I'm not, you know, my background is jiu-jitsu. You know, always jiu-jitsu saved me for many years, you know what I mean? But I had this in my head, I don't know what was it, but in my head was like, hey, you got to sharpen up your hands. You're going to need it.
Well, you grew up in the jiu-jitsu community when there was a very big rivalry between jiu-jitsu and lucha libre.
Yes.
What do you recall about that era?
I remember that if we go to a nightclub and you see a lot of lucha libre guys, for sure it would be a fight, you know? And either way, if the Luta Livre guy sees a lot of jiu-jitsu guys, it would be a fight, you know? And I remember that one time when I was going out, I had my mouthpiece in my pocket. So, man, I was like, man, somebody's going to, you know, come to fight. You know what I'm saying? Like, but it was hard, man. We did have some fights, you know? We did have some tension there, you know? And it was a big rivalry, man.
Wow.
But I'm glad that's in the past. You know, like on these days, I have my best friend Tata. You know, he has like a great MMA team in Brazil. It's a TFT, Tata Fight Team. He has some guys in UFC and everything. And I was there. I helped some guys and everything. And we do have Luta Livre guys on these days that we all train together. You know, and I'm glad this is in the past already. But I think we had to go through that. You know what I mean?
It pushed you. It made you guys. It made you better. Made them better. And
exactly.
Did you ever have any dealings with Paquetá?
Paquetá, yes, yeah. Master, okay, Paquetá. So I call him Master because he was the master of the filming, man. You know, he had, man, that guy. You know, he had any fight you ask him for. You know, any fight. You're talking about, I don't know, whatever fight, he'll be like, hold on 1 second. He goes there on his, you know, files and he'll be like, okay. And he gives you a tape. You know what I mean? And that guy was so nice with me, man. I want to pay him something, but he always says, no, man, you know, this is a gift for you. This is a tape for you. You know, like, man, you can keep it. You know, thanks for representing jiu-jitsu. He was always a great guy with me, man. Always.
And the crazy thing is, like, all right, so I always talk to the jiu-jitsu guys. All of them say, great guy, incredible person. He was the YouTube before it existed.
Yeah.
But then I tracked down the Luta Livre guys, too. Because you got to remember, there was a very, like, you guys were fighting in clubs, lots of disagreements. He was aligned with Carlson. And the Luta Livre guys, like Francisco Bueno, Babalu, both of those guys said, man, he was a phenomenal human being. He was a very, very good guy. So you've got two enemies in the wild.
Well, Francisco Bueno is the jiu-jitsu guy.
Well, he's a jiu-jitsu guy, but he bounced. He bounced around.
He bounced. Yes, he did.
He went. But you know, a guy like even Jay-Z Cavalcante
Sorry to interrupt. Which is another guy that I spar with a lot, Francisco Bueno, at the LA Boxing Club. You know, he helped me a lot with my boxing. Great guy, big guy.
Underappreciated.
Yes, exactly.
Another guy, underappreciated.
Yes.
So even he said, like Jay-Z Cavalcante, although he came to jiu-jitsu, started a Lucha Libre, even they, from the Lucha Libre side, both said, and I know Babalu came over as well. They said, no, man, the Lucha Libre guys loved Paquetá.
Yes. Man, he was loved. Even that he was with Carson, yes. Even the guys from White Tie, they love him. I don't know one person that talks bad about Paquetá. Really, I don't. You know? And like I say, I don't know if he was charging some other guys, but for me, he was like, he has the tape ready. You know?
Babalu said, he's Lucha Libre. He said, no, man, you try to pay him, and he wouldn't. And he would also give you all of the matches. He wouldn't short us matches. We knew he was a jiu-jitsu guy, but his love for the sport was much greater than anything else. And because of that, both sides liked him.
Yes. Perfect. Perfect.
It's friggin' crazy. And you crazy. Know, all the
great
all the
guy. Old... Great guy, man. Great vibe. Great guy. I was smiling, you know. I was there like, man, I remember the first day I asked him a tape. You know, like nervous? We didn't have cell phones and everything. Yeah, it's like I met him and Grandmaster Carson Gracie, you know, so I'm walking and I see Carson Gracie coming like with Paquetá. And I'm like, should I ask Paquetá the tape or not now? You know, Carson's with him. And then Carson was like, just smiling. Hey, man, I saw your fight. And I'm like, man, Carson saw my fight, you know, like. And then he shakes my hands. He says, congratulations, man. You're doing a great job. Whenever you want to come to the academy to spar with some guys over there, feel free to do it, you know. And Grandmaster Carson, he didn't say in a way that he was trying to steal me from George, right? He was like, hey, man, I love you and love George. You guys are great. You know, anytime you guys want to come over to spar, my doors are open for you guys. You know? Oh. And I said, thank you so much, Grandmaster. Thank you. He's like, and then I took advantage. Hey, Paquetá, you know?
Yeah,
he's like,
I need a favor. I need a favor, man.
I got your tape, man, you know? Just stop by anytime, you know? And then he gave me the address. I'm like, man, you know, that was great.
So what I think is so unique about this era, which really draws me to it, guys like yourself, Master Carlson, Jose Mario, all of those guys, nobody thought that you could make a lot of money or a very big living. You did it for pride and love.
We never thought about money. Like, I didn't get paid on my first two or three events, tournaments, MMA, Vale Tudo, whatever, you know what I mean? Like, the first one, they create like a problem over there. I don't remember what was it. I didn't care. You know, I was there to
Wait. You never got paid for your first tournament?
And the second and the third. Actually, sorry. The second one, I got paid. The third one, I was in Vitória Espírito Santo, which we can talk about that after.
Yeah, you know?
And I got we call in Brazil a bouncer check, you know?
Like a basketball. Yeah.
Like a basketball check, you know? He goes here, that is nothing on your account, you know what I mean? So, but like I say, like I wasn't there for the money, you know?
Nobody was thinking
the money I would make. Of course, money is great, you know? But I was there to represent jiu-jitsu, man. To represent my master, George Pereira. What an honor for me, man, to be, you know, training in Vale Tudo MMA with Grandmaster George, you know, to be walking paths with him, you know what I mean?
And him being proud. Yeah, him being proud is, yes.
And like, okay, I'm a purple belt, And I'm walking a tournament, some black belts coming to me and says, "Hey, man, great job. Keep doing. Keep working. You know, great job, man. Thank you." They like, and I mean good names. You know what I mean? Even Master Murilo, you know, I see him one day. He looks at me all serious. You know how Murilo is. "Good job, boy. Good job, man." You know? And not just him, man. Many others. You know, many others. You know, for me, as a purple belt on that time, you know, was something else. You know what I mean?
Right. And anybody with any common sense, anybody that is very focused, wouldn't have stuck around. They would have went to college, got a job at a bank. But the pride and love and just loyalty is like you guys and wrestlers, your cousins that like to fight.
Yes. Yep. Yep. I remember, man, I went to college and everything, but like I had in my mind, I'm like, man, I, you know, I need to train, man. I'm going to be doing this full time. You know what I mean? And I did the college just because my mom was like, you know, talking, you know, but we had a conversation not too long ago, you know, and it was funny because, you know, for the first time in my life, I told my mom, you know, she was like, "Man, you seem very happy." And I'm like, "Yeah, man, mom, I am happy. You know, I do what I love to do it. You know what I mean? It's like her with her job. You know, she's 74. She's still working. She loves what she does. And I'm like, I'm exactly like that, mom. You know, if I wasn't in college doing something else, I wasn't going to be happy. You know what I mean?
Right. No, I was going to, sure.
Of course, I would have maybe the same life with like my kids and my wife and everything, but I would be miserable, I think. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I love stepping a mat every day. I stopped seeing like changing somebody's life. You know, I love it.
And you here, why don't we give a plug for your school? We probably should have done this in the beginning. Why don't you tell everybody how they can find you?
They can go to the website wonderbragabjj.com. There's all the information there. But right now I'm in North Carolina, Cornelius, you know, and I opened 5 months ago my studio here, you know, and we've been doing pretty well. Been changing some people's life, you know, and I'm really happy. You know, I was in LA, but long story short, you know, we decided, me and my wife, to move out here, and we've been doing great.
Just like everybody else from LA.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Only my kids decide to stay there, man. I don't know why, you know, I know why, but, you know, like I tell them, I'm like, "Guys, LA is very expensive right now. Very expensive, man. Crazy, you know." But yes, I'm glad, man. I'm glad I had a proposal from my friend and partner, you know, Iggy, you know, and it was great, man. It was great. Great decision.
Good move. Yeah, for sure. For sure. Here, we talked about boxes checked. This gentleman fought July 5th, 1995, Circuito de Lutas 2, another four-man tournament.
That one I got paid for.
What was the total price?
I think it was, okay, let's say 2,000 reais would be $400.
Okay. That's not bad. That's not bad for back then.
Good money.
Joao Fernandez and Luis Fraga.
Luis Fraga was a black belt in jiu-jitsu. You know?
Selvagem, I think
Selvagem.
Was his name.
Selvagem. Selvagem is like a, wild.
It's skinny. Was it skinny or no? Or
wild? It's like wild, you know?
Okay. Silvestre, like in Spanish. Okay.
Selvagem.
So you beat Joel Fernandez by armbar. You win Luis Fraga. You win by decision. Man, another victorious night. I'm sure mom was very happy and grandma was very happy that you continued fighting.
Yeah, after that, they got used to it.
It's no longer their choice. Yeah. So you get paid $400 for that. September 12th, 1995, kind of a quick turnaround. Circuito de Lutas 3, another four-man tournament. So you're looking at, this gentleman showed up to three venues, and he's got 2-4-7 fights in 3 appearances. Alexandre yep. Bueno and Leandro Heck Gamble. So 2 knockouts in those. So you had started working with your hands. Was this around Francisco Bueno? You had met him?
No, that was from Master Wagner.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Did you ever work out with George Meddy for judo?
The judo guy? Yes. I work out like 1 week, you know. But I used to do judo with Geraldo Bernardes, you know, in Baja. But okay. I went there to meet Master Meddy for a week, you know. He was a great guy, too.
Very great good guy. Teacher. Yeah, he doesn't do interviews. Good. He doesn't do interviews, but he should. He's a legend.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is.
Did you ever do judo with Alex Davis?
No. Alex Davis, I met him in L.A. long time ago. You know, but I never did judo with him. I wish I could, you know, but yeah, we met just like one of those MMA events. And then okay. I started seeing him in jiu-jitsu tournaments, you know, great guy too. He works Olympian. With some of my, he works with yeah. some of my guys from Brazil, you know, it's great.
So Alex was the head judo coach over at American Top Team for a while. He's a very big manager now. Yes, sometimes yes. you see him. Sometimes you see him translate some of the Portuguese to English.
He's. I think he managed some of the fighters from Tata in Brazil. You know, I believe it's him. You know, and I've seen him there when I was in Brazil. So I know pretty much he worked with some guys. I don't know if he works with all of them, but yes, he got some guys from the school too.
When you fought in Circa de Elitas 3, which is a four-man tournament, Alexandre Bueno, Leandro Heck Gambo were your two opponents. Your coach fought Ebenezer Braga in the finals yes. that night. Dude, Ebenezer Braga? Oh, my God, what a yeah. savage.
Yeah. I remember that fight, man. George was in the mount position, punching his face, and he was punching back at George. And screaming like punch again, man. That was a good fight. And then the referee wants to stop, and George is like, don't stop. The guy he wants to keep going, right? And Ebenezer was like, I want to keep going. No, it was crazy.
So the Americans used to go down there, and Eben, they'd always, I shouldn't say always, but he fought quite a few Americans that I knew personally. And like Brandon Lee Hinkle, they would come back and they would say, Jeremy Horn, there's another one. And they would come back and say.
I think he fought Kevin Randleman, right? No.
Kevin Randleman as well. But in Randleman, there was like almost a riot there because Braga yeah. kept going underneath the ropes. Mark Coleman almost attacked the entire row of people behind him. But all of them would come back. And even Randleman and Mark Coleman would say, there's levels to this game. And Ebenezer Braga is higher than and harder than anybody that they've ever dealt with.
Yes, he was. He still is, you know. Another guy that should be more appreciated.
Oh, you know look I mean? At his body of work. And, yeah. and the cool thing, and just for historic value, the first NHB women's tournament on record was that night on that card.
Yeah, man, I remember also George has one of the secrets in São Paulo, and I believe Vanderlei fought at the semifinal, and he Wanderlei didn't Silva. Return yeah. it. Wanderlei Silva, yeah, he didn't. Man, we had so many great guys fighting Pelé, you know, great guy too, man, great MMA fighter, man.
Here's the you know, big problem.
Shootbox actually start on that circuit of fights.
Right.
Right.
But here's the big problem, and it's a huge one. You had all of these incredibly talented fighters that would become legends outside of Brazil, but you guys were all fighting for no money.
yeah. Yeah. Yes. Yes. We were fighting just for the love of what we do it, man. You know?
Yeah, I mean, fighting like Ebenezer Braga for almost nothing.
I believe the guys from Shootbox, they want to represent their, you know, martial arts the way they want you, with love, with passion, with, you know what I mean, loyalty. And it was the same thing for the jiu-jitsu guys and probably the lucha libre guys. You know what I mean?
So you also fought on BVF 6, November 1st, 1996, Brazilian Valley Judo Fighting. And Frederico Lependa was the matchmaker. What was your dealings like with Frederico?
So that I didn't fight. I don't remember who was my opponent. That I think he got hurt or something. Yeah, so I didn't fight that day. I went inside.
It said you fought in a four-man tournament that day.
No.
Here, I'll tell you. Let me give you the names. It said Johnny Eduardo.
Maybe, okay, I fought a BF something, but it wasn't the Lapenda one. The Lapenda one, I signed it.
Wait. So let me just correct. I put Frederico Lapenda's name down because my belief that he was there. But maybe it was a Sergio Bottarelli only. I don't know. Like, so that could be an issue on my end.
Yeah, I don't think I know. He was there for sure, Frederico Lapenda, you know, but I don't think it was his tournament. You know, but
I saw him in the audience. So I wrote his name down. Yeah, I figured it was his tournament.
Probably. He was, because he was a big name also, making, you know, great events and everything with Sergio Bottarelli. So, you know, but well, I think he was there for sure, you know, but he wasn't the owner of that tournament.
Okay, that's fair. You know? That's fair. That could be on my end. So you went to another four-man
tournament. Like I say, I don't remember. I don't remember much, you know, like the dates and the, you know, I'm really bad. Like, my wife keeps saying, "Hey, man, you don't remember the date?" I'm like, "No, I don't." You know, I didn't write out nothing, you know.
Hey,
even my records, like, I think my record right now is 17-1. And they keep putting down the now it's like 15-1, but I have more fights than that. I didn't have nothing to prove. You know what I mean?
My wife tells me I forgot things all the time, and it's especially when she's buying shit. So I'm not. Yeah, I don't know if I'd really believe her on all of those instances. But your four-man tournament, like, if you look at this event, it's one of my favorites outside of like some of the UFCs and Prides. Dilson Filho comes out in the Chicago Blackhawks jersey, gets beat by Wanderlei Silva 3 minutes later. But you fought Johnny Eduardo and Alton dos Santos. I mean, Johnny Eduardo is Pratino, and he's out of Nuevo Uniao. Like, he was a very tough competitor.
Yes, he was. Yes, what was a tough fight for me, man. Tough fight, you know, because that time I remember that fight too, because like I say, it was Vale Tudo, right? So he was holding the ropes. And I remember that I grabbed him and I'm trying to put him down and he's not going down, you know? And I'm like, man, that guy's strong, you know? Good base, because usually when I get here, I put everybody down. And then I hear George say, "Calm down, he's holding the ropes." You know what I mean? And then I'm like, oh, okay. And then I had to use it. I remember also Valid Ismael was on that, walking around, and like I say, jiu-jitsu guys used to get together, you know what I mean, against all the other martial arts, you know. And even that he trains with Nova Union, he was there representing the Muay Thai guys, you know. And Valide starts screaming like, "Headbutt, headbutt!" And then I say, "Okay, I got a headbutt," you know. So yeah, I remember I had the gable grip on him and I started doing the headbutt. Then he had to let go the rope to protect, right? As soon as he protected the headbutt, then I put him down.
It's part of the game. Yeah.
Funny story on that. I don't know if Johnny remembers, you know. I saw him two times, and he came to me, a very nice guy too, you know. But I don't know if he remembers, but I do. I was on his half guard, you know, and like tried to punch, and he was holding my arms, he was protecting, and he puts his hand like on my face, you know, and he was like kind of pulling my nose and pulling my, you know, eye gouge me, put the hand inside my mouth, you know, pushing me, you know. And then I looked at the referee, you know, like trying to show him that he's doing this on my face, you know what I mean? And I remember Leo Dalla was in my corner too, and Leo Dalla was like screaming at the referee, "Hey referee, he's eye gouging him, you know. you know, and then the referee says, look back and says, this is vale tudo, man. Shut up, you know? Yeah. So I remember that I pulled my mouthpiece off. And when he put his finger close to my mouth, I beat it. Right? That's when he like let go a little bit. And then I got into a good position, you know, and okay,
man, it's kind of like real, man. It's kind of
okay. If you say on these days, you're gonna say it, that's cheating, you know. But
nah, that's a game.
That's a game, man. It was a vale tudo. So I said, okay, I use it, and he was using one weapon, I use mine, and that's it. You know, but it wasn't too hard, so it was just to distract him a little bit.
That's the game. That's the game, man. That's the game.
Yeah. Yeah.
So now we've got 1, 2, 3, 4. Your fifth appearance at an MMA event is another 8-man tournament.
Oh, by the way, I did an interview. So I don't know if you heard about Portal do Vale Tudo in Brazil, you know? Okay. And they told me that I still hold the record of I'm the only one that has over 5 8-man tournaments.
So the other person that people like to argue is Igor Vovchenchin. Yes. Igor Vovchenchin, I think, has the record for most tournament wins.
Uh-huh.
But I think you're number two. But in terms of 8-man tournaments, man.
So, okay. If Igor's, but I think they are mentioned about the Brazilians. So I'm the number one in Brazil. Right?
Yes.
Well, yeah, maybe. Igor. Igor has what? How many?
I don't have it off the top of my head.
I'm still happy. You know, I'm still proud of myself. Like, you know.
Yeah.
That's good. That's good record.
And you know, to even walk in showing, wow, I got to fight 3 times tonight.
Yes.
Like the adrenaline dumps in the locker room
crazy.
To calm down.
It's crazy.
There's an art to that. And it's not easy.
That was like a huge mental game. You know what I mean? Every time you finish up, it's funny. You know, you mentioned this because, and something new here that you know everybody is new. Nobody knows yet. So just my family and some of my students. You know, I'm writing a book right now. It's gonna be ready pretty soon, and. The guy that helped me write, he was just asking me about that. You know, it's funny because, you know, you win the first fight, you have that. How can I say? How can I explain that in English? Like, you have that happiness, you know what I mean? Like, that, okay, mission accomplished, but it wasn't like accomplished yet. You know what I mean? Like, you had that little time that you can be happy. George used to tell me this. George says, okay, you have 10 minutes. Be ready on those 10 minutes. Get back and focus. Keep the game on, you know? So I was kind of like happy for like a minute. You know, I was like, man, you know, I won my first fight. So semifinal now. Okay, let's focus. Like, relax, let's focus. You know what I mean? Like, it was a good feeling too, but short feeling. The best feeling was at the end of the tournament, you know?
Wow. Wow. That's difficult to control those emotions for sure.
Yeah. And every time somebody knocks the door, man, you're like, okay, I'm ready. I got to go now, you know? And then they knock the door. They open the door. They say, oh, you have 10 minutes. I'm like, fuck, man. Why do you keep saying that? You know, like, don't knock the door. Just open and say, okay, you got to go.
Right. Make it easier. Yeah, make it easy. Right. So your next 8-man tournament is June 12th, 1998, Inside Fighter Valley Tudo, Euclid, Orico, Marco Antonio, and Milton De Castro. You went decision, KO, sub. Like, you're getting finishes, too. Like, you're finding your finish in every tournament, which is very important.
Yes, yes. I was, George used to say, man, he calls me, George used to call me Van Dixon. It was a mixing of Wander with Hickson, right? Van Dixon. You know, he says, man, go for the finish, Van Dixon. You know, our George always teaches us to, like, finish. You know? Don't wait for the referee. I was like a tank, man. I was going forward all the time, you know? And that Inside Fighter was in Vitória, right?
Yes, yes.
So that, when that was when I got my black belt. And the good part about that is I won, like, my first opponent walk in and he didn't fight. He walk in and he says, I didn't get paid. I'm not fighting. So I look at George and I say, George, I didn't get paid too, you know? And George is like, don't worry, man. We'll fix that later. I'm like, man, I'm going through that thing again. You know, like, but it's okay. I'm not here for the money, but I don't want to keep fighting for free. You know what I mean?
The money is nice. It is, yeah, so it is nice.
I won my first fight, right? A DQ. All right, won. Went back inside. Called me again for the semifinal. I beat my opponent. I believe it was 4 minutes. Went to the final. I beat my opponent in the final less than 5 minutes. So they came with the microphone, you know how they do it, right? So, hey, you want to thank who you want to thank, you know, tell me about that fight, which one was the best one, you know. So I'm talking and I'm saying, okay, thank you. Thanks for my family. Thanks for my coach, my friends that came here from Rio de Janeiro, you know. And then George was right beside me, you know, saying like, okay, give him the microphone, you know. And then I gave the microphone. The first guy that walks in, I believe the guy was from the city. And he didn't fight. So George got the microphone and says, look, is there anyone from the city here that want to challenge my student? I somebody else walk in and the guy didn't fight. If you guys want to do it, now is the time. Man, I believe I know the whole crowd came down around the ring. One guy jumps in. It was one of the hardest fights I ever had in my life. His name is Ouriço, Tony Ouriço. He's now a jiu-jitsu instructor under Verdun, and I think he's in Australia. And he jumps in and he says, I'll fight him. I'll represent my city. I'll fight him. And I'm like, man, I'm the champ already. I already fought. I'm thinking about my check now. I'm not thinking about fighting.
So just, you know, this is August of 1998. You win your tournament. This is what happens. Okay, so was it a 4-man tournament or an 8-man tournament?
It was an 8-man tournament. Okay. Supposed to be 6-man tournament, right?
No,
was an 8-man tournament. Three fights.
Three fights, 8-man. Yeah.
Good. And then I have to fight one more because George challenged the whole city.
Okay, so this is what I have on record. I'm so glad we brought this up. So I have on record that you win a tournament and then a rival gym owner. Was it a rival gym owner or was it somebody from the city?
It was somebody from the city.
Okay, okay.
Because it was somebody from the city because George got the microphone and he kind of challenged the whole city. Yeah. You're laughing. Imagine me in that time, man. You know, I was
This is Colby Covington before Colby Covington existed. Right.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah. Right. George was like that. George was good on that.
You could make sure you got fights. Oh, you don't have a fight? Yes. I will get you one. Give me the microphone. Okay.
Man, I remember that I was walking, you know, and everybody's looking at me, you know, and I'm like with the trophy already, walking down, and I went inside the backstage, you know, and I have Lil Dalla was going to fight next, and Paulo Guilherme was going to fight next, and they were asking me, hey, why is it taking so long? And I'm like, man, George challenged the whole city. That is one guy in the ring that he wants to fight me, you know, and it's like, okay, but what are we going to do it now? It's like, I don't know, and then George walks in, opened the door, closed the door, and says, Vander, You get a fight for the honor of jiu-jitsu, man. And I'm like, but George, I won the tournament already. Make that fight for the next event. And George says, no, man, there is no next. It's now. Yeah. And then we fought, like, then I went back there. I had to fight again. I went back there. And we fought 15 minutes. You know, Ouriço put Tony, his nickname is Ouriço, but his name is Tony. You know, great guy too. We talk over the internet, you know. And he put up like a great fight for me, man. You know, he was moving a lot, you know, starts getting sweat. I was getting dizzy because I had some head concussion, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah, you've already fought three times. Yeah, you fought three times. That's why.
Yes. I was getting dizzy. I remember an important moment of that fight. I don't know why. I was in a mount position, punching. I don't know why they stopped it. They pulled the fight up. I'm not sure. I don't remember. I remember it was a great fight. And I went back to the corner, and I was seeing like three guys. You know what I mean? Like, man, George, I see three guys. You know, I'm dizzy. You know, and George just looked at me and says, don't worry, man. Get the middle guy. Aim at the middle guy. There is no way you're going to miss it. You know? You know, and then I'm saying, okay, man, George's not going to let me. He's not going to let me quit or something. So I'm going to keep going, you know?
But
I kept going for like 15, I think 20 minutes. I'm not sure how long was it. I know it was longer. And there is no more time. They just keep let it go, you know? And one time they ring the bell, and then he went back. I went back to my corner, and then he looks at me. He says, did I represent my city well? I says, yes, you did. Then he says, okay, that's it. And I'm like, that's it. And then we both lifted our arms, you know, and that's it.
At any point when this was all going down, maybe even in the locker room, before the fight starts, your fourth fight that you didn't sign up for, did you ever think to yourself, maybe my mom and grandma were right?
Well, I don't think I had time to think about that, you know. But if I think about it, yes, I think I would say, like, yes, you're right. You
know what I mean? Mom was right. But
you know what?
This.
You know what was the best moment for me? I still think it was the best moment for me because, you know, George, after the fight, so I won, they lift my arms again, you know, and then George, he grabs me first, he looks at me and says, Van Dixon, you remember this for the rest of your life. Nobody ever did that before, you know, and it's a great honor. And he says something like that, you know, it was very, he had a great impact on me, you know what I mean, like, I'm very emotional when I'm talking about that, you know, it's like, because he says like, okay, I will always remember this. And I hope you do too, you know, because it's important for me that you know that now you are complete as a student for me. You are a black belt now. And then he pulls a black belt and he ties a black belt on me that day.
Oh, man. Yeah. So in other words, sometimes people run down a line of people that whip them with belts. He challenged the entire audience.
Yes.
That's going to be your opportunity to get your black belt. Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
It was a great moment, man. Great moment. You know, I still have the picture here in my, academy from that day. And I have the belt still hanging in there. You know, and it's a great moment, man.
That's one of those pictures where somebody says, oh, you know, tell me about this. And you say, we need about 30 minutes. There's a lot behind that one moment in time. There's a lot there. Wow.
You're right.
That's amazing. Let's talk about some of your students. The owner of Robot Method Gym, Tim Peterson.
Tim Peterson, great black belt, great guy. You know, excellent guard. My first black belt in America, Peter Han, helped him a lot. You know, I gotta give credit to Peter because Peter works a lot with Tim. You know, I used to do this a lot. I used to tell my higher belts, you know, high rank belts, to tell, you know, grab some lower belts and adopt them. You know what I mean? whatever I did to you, you got to do to them. And that's what I do with my team a lot.
What's incredible is you've also cornered a few people. Shaolin Ribeiro, I saw you in the corner with this K1 Heroes fight against Ryuki Uyama.
Yeah. Shaolin is one of my best friends now, man. You know, like, he used to come a lot to LA to teach seminars, and I used to help him with that. He used to stay in my house like 1 month, 2 months. We used to train a lot. And then he was coming to my house, and I started to like negotiate some fights for him. I wasn't his manager, you know. I was just like helping him, you know, and as a friend, you know what I mean? And I love him, man. He's a great guy. But yeah, we train a lot. You know, I learned a lot with him. I thought I was an athlete before, but once I met Shaolin, I kind of like realized that I wasn't really like a good athlete, you know, until I met Shaolin. Really?
He was special, though. I mean, he's special, I should say. He's special. Yeah. It's a different level of athlete.
It is. That guy is like, he doesn't drink, man, you know. You know, not that I drink a lot, you know, but I used to go like drink a little bit, you know, go out and everything. That guy goes out with me, he never drinks. He was always working out, always training, always thinking about, you know, and then I say, man, something's wrong with me. You know what I mean? Like, and I learned a lot, man. I learned a lot. Not just like about that, but like in positions too, you know. He helped improve my game a lot too, you know.
Gabriel Gonzaga.
My first black belt ever. My first student from white to black belt. I'm proud of him, man. My brother. You know, Napão. You know, great, great, great friend, great brother. I'm proud of him. You know, and I remember when he started, he was like probably 12 years old too, you know. And great guy, man.
Very special athlete as well.
Very special, man.
Yeah, he hit like a ton of bricks. I mean, that guy could hit hard. Very hard.
Really hard.
You also have a black belt. Mike Anchieta is one of your black belts?
Mike Anchieta, yes. My black belt from LA. Also a great athlete. Great guy, man. Great jiu-jitsu guy, you know. I have a group in LA, man. They started with me. Peter, Mike, you know, Muffu, Rich. And I'm sorry, man. There's so many guys, you know, Charles, you know, some guys, man. They started like as a white belt. They believe me, you know, and I'm glad I crossed paths with those guys, you know. They helped me a lot to grow my jiu-jitsu too, man, because, you know, it was like Dan and me for my fights. You know what I mean? I know, like, yes, I went to train with Hickson, but I wasn't training with Hickson every day. I was training with Hickson, like, every Wednesday or sometimes Saturdays, you know. But my student that time, man, those white belts, blue belts, man, they helped me a lot. They helped me push myself, you know.
Yeah, for sure. And talk about pushing yourself. August 9th, 2003, you fought Nick Ertl in the UFC, or WEC.
WEC. Caesar.
Dude, Cesar Gracie Academy, he's got wins over Nam Phan, Brian the Bandit Cobb. He was a legitimate opponent.
Yes, he was. I think, you know, he almost got me in a triangle. I was surprised of that. You know, he got like, he locked, and I was like, oh, man, you know what I mean? But yeah, he was really tough, legit. And again, you know, like, I appreciate I had that fight with him. It was great. Great event too, man.
Yeah, absolutely. May of 2000.
I remember because I was coming from Vale Tudo, right? So everything, I could do everything. So, and my English wasn't, you know, not that it's good, it's perfect right now, but it was bad that time, you know? So they're talking about the rules and it was just me and George's English wasn't good too. So I didn't care about the rules. I wasn't paying attention about the rules. So I remember I passed his guard and he turned and I hit him with my knee on his face and he got a cut. And I believe the referee was Herb Dean and they stopped the fight. because he got a cut, and I wasn't allowed to do a knee on his face, only on the body, right? And WC was really great in that time, man, because they understood, you know. I walked towards them and I say, guys, I speak no English. I'm sorry, you know, like, and I remember, really, I remember, like, I was telling them, I say, look, I can let him hit me on my face and cut me too, so we get even. You know what I mean? I don't know how I say that, you know, but I think they understood, and they're like, man, it's okay. We're going to let the fight go. We're going to take 1 point away from you. And I say, okay, take point away from me, but don't stop the fight, you know? And then I look to Nick Earl, and I say, man, you okay to fight, you know what I mean? Don't do that. Don't win just because I did, like, an illegal, you know? It wasn't important, man. I don't know how I said, but I was saying something, right? And then he says, no, continue to fight. I'll keep going. You know, tough guys, man, from Charles Grace, you know? Like,
yeah, respect. That's it. Yeah. On both sides, yeah.
Then Herbie Dean says, okay, we're going to continue to fight. Go back to your corner. And then I went back to my corner, and George was like, what did you say? I'm like, I don't know, George. They're going to continue the fight.
Let's just words. I say words. I don't know.
And then, thanks God, again, I won, you know.
You were on quite a streak, man. You had quite a streak. And I'll tell you, like, you also, in May of 2004, you fought on the United Gracie Jiu-Jitsu Tournament, Alexandre Crispim, Half Gracie Black Belt. You won the Pan Ams as a brown belt.
So I didn't fight Crispim. I was supposed to fight, you know, he was in my, I don't know, my division, but I think I fought somebody else. I'm sorry, I don't remember, but I know Crispim, I didn't fight him.
I never found results, but I saw that at one point it was scheduled. Okay, good. We cleared that up.
It was scheduled, and then he didn't fight. I don't know why. I don't even know if it was him, but I know he wasn't on my division or something, you know? So it was somebody else. It was somebody. I remember I read on an email or something that, you know, I forgot about that too, but I should be looking that, but yeah, I don't remember. But it wasn't him.
Well, let's talk about somebody who definitely fought. King of the Cage, June 12, 2004, one of the California legends of the independent grind, Joe Camacho.
Joe Camacho, man.
Tough son of a bitch. Tough son of a bitch, man.
Man, one of the hardest fights you. I remember, first round, we respect each other a lot, you know. I think he was checking me out. He knew it. I had like a good double legs, you know what I mean? So, and I feel it that he was preparing something for me. And I was right. Second round, man, I fake it like I was going to punch, and I went for a double leg. He did a fly knee, hit my stomach really hard. I took him down. I got on top of him. But I was with no air at all. You know when you get those body punch, body
kick?
The
wind knocked out of you, yeah.
Yes, man. I remember George was like screaming, keep going, punch him. And I'm trying to look at George, to tell him that I couldn't breathe much, you know what I mean? But at the same time, George was saying, if you stop it, they're going to pick the fight up again. So in my mind, it's like, man, if they stop the fight now and put the fight up, I can stand up. So I was just like landing some punches, but the punch was like really like doing nothing, you know what I mean? And finally, like I believe it was after 30 seconds or 1 minute, I'm not sure. I pulled there and I'm like, okay, I can breathe back again. Then I started going back after him again, you know? But it was a hard fight, man. Tough guy. You know what's the funny part too? 2 weeks later, Joe Camacho came into my academy. He walks in and he said, hey, man, how are you? Man, it's like jiu-jitsu guys, MMA guys, Vale Tudo guys, they're all crazy. He walks in and says, hey, with all due respect, I still think that I won that fight. And I'm like, no, you didn't win that fight. He says, can we fight now to take this out of my mind? And I'm like, you mean now, me and you? He says, yes, well, Nobody will see it. I have some students over there. And I say, but we're going to fight MMA? He's like, yeah, we're going to fight MMA. If you knock me out, I'll stop it. You know, if I knock you out, then I say, okay, let's do it.
Come on, man.
Yes. And then we did like 10 minutes. We went out of each other for 10 minutes.
No breaks.
After 10 minutes, he says, man, you legit. It's okay. You know, it's good. And I'm like, thank you, man. He's like, thank you, man. And I'm like, that's it.
Holy.
He stood up. Tough motherfucker, man. You know, just stood up and he walks out and says, can I be back another day? I'm like, sure, man.
Yeah, so we can fight again. Yeah, we fight again.
You know, that's it, man. That's
it. You know, Professor Braga, in any other line of work, if you were to say, well, yeah, I mean, I had an instance with this guy at this point. He showed up a few days later. We fought in the gym, very gentlemanly, very good fight. And then he asked if we can beat each other up again. And I said, of course. Like, it doesn't make – there's no – it's crazy, but it makes sense.
It's crazy, right? But, like,
yeah.
I would never – I don't know, man. Like, that time – on these days, I'm 49. If somebody walks in and says, hey, let's fight. I want to fight you. I'll be laughing at him. You know what I mean? But that day, man, you know, we trained really hard, man. And George, you know, like – I thought about it. Okay, if George was here, George would love him. I would say, okay, lock the doors. Let's fight. So I did exactly what
That's old school.
Do.
That's that Lucha Libre Jiu-Jitsu rivalry, yep. Except this year. Wow.
Yeah.
Joe Camacho passed cancer. I know there's a foundation for him. Somebody that made an incredible impact on many people's lives in the state of California. In Texas, there was a jiu-jitsu tournament called Finisher's Cup.
Finisher's Cup.
With Chuck Williams.
Yes.
Do you remember that?
I remember the tournament. I don't know if I fought Chuck Williams. I remember the name. Again, I'm
sorry. He was the promoter.
Okay, he was promoter. I don't remember who I fought, if I fought. I remember the finish name. I remember Chuck Williams. Remember the name and everything, but I don't remember who I fought. If I lose.
Let me help you.
Yes.
Do you remember getting paid?
I believe so. I believe so, but not
really.
I believe so, but not everything though.
Okay. And it was
not
late.
Everything.
I'm sure it was very late as well, right?
Yes. Late. And part of the money, though.
Okay.
All right?
Okay.
But I don't remember how was it, because I had one guy take care of the, like, he was kind of like my manager, you know, in that time. So, and again, I was thinking on my next fight already. You know what I mean? I was training for my next fight already. So I was like, okay, man, take care of this. Whatever I get, it's great. You know what I mean? But yeah, I remember, like, I didn't get paid everything. Yes, you're right.
You had mentioned Tata earlier, Octavio
yes.
Duarte.
Yes.
Why don't you give us a little about Duarte?
Tata, man, great fighter, great competitor too, man. You know, huge guy. I remember Tata used to go, his nickname is Tatazinho, you know, little Tata. But he was huge. And man, Tata walks in a tournament, everybody was like, oh my God, you know? Great professor, man, great teacher, great friend. Love him, opens the door for me when I was in Brazil. You know, great brotherhood, friendship, excellent competitor. And now he's like doing a great job with his MMA fighters, you know, some guys in UFC. Like André Sergipano, Thiago Marreta, you know, all those guys, man. Poliana Viana, Cowboy, the Brazilian Cowboy, they all trained with Tata and they all went to UFC with Tata, you know. I'm proud of Tata, man. He grew up with us, man, doing like fights with us all the time, you know, training with us all the time. George used to put everyone to fight MMA inside the academy, you know. No matter what, after the train, you stick with George, and then we do some Vale Tudo, you know. And even that Tata didn't fight any MMA fights or Vale Tudo, you know, he's a great coach, man. I'm proud of him.
Rudy Fishman.
Rudy, great Rudy, man. One of my black belts too. And yeah, he's from LA. One of my black belts. And I think he had a huge fight against cancer, man.
Yeah.
You know, great warrior too, man. You know what I mean? Great guy, man. But like, I don't recall one of my students or one of my friends, like one of the guys that crossed paths with me that I can say, man, I don't like that guy. You know what I mean? Maybe, yeah, I'll remember someone, but no, Rudy was one of the great guys too, man.
D'Artagnan Bagby, another.
D'Artagnan, tough guy, man. Tough guy. D'Artagnan wasn't my black belt, but he trains with me for a long time. He helps me to my fights, you know, for gi fights, MMA fights. He was visiting me a lot. He was coming like 3 times a week to spar with me. And again, another great guy with great ideas. And, you know, like I say, remember, like, I need some guys to spar with. So anybody was welcome to my academy. I didn't have that ego about, oh, he's a black belt from this team, he's a black belt from that team, you know? And everything was great, man. Everything was, you know, like, I was welcoming everyone.
That's good, man. That's really good. So you also had Big Brother team. It was Leo Dalla, Tata, and yourself. Why did that team break up?
We actually... It's a hard story, you know, like, it was like, remember that time, there was like, everybody was starting, like, you know, like, Alliance and Gracie Barra, and some teams are growing and everything, and we came up with that idea about the Big Brothers, you know. I was just like, you know, I was just there watching everyone, you know, I was trying to support everybody, you know. But George didn't like much that idea, you know. George didn't want to, like, change his name and put, like, Big Brothers. So it was kind of like a huge inside fight between all of us. You know what I mean? I understand what George was saying. You know what I mean? But it would be also a great idea, you know. Now, these days, it's easy for me to speak with George about that, you know. But I really understand what George was trying to say in that time, you know. I just think that George didn't know how to speak, you know what I mean? George was very rough. You know, I can imagine like some of your, you know, students, you see them like at the age of 10 years old, 12 years old, you grow up with them, you make them become what they are, and then suddenly we come up with the idea saying,
oh, we're gonna change the name.
We're not gonna use your name. Gonna use this name now. I think it's a great idea, man. I can't understand why he exposed.
I get that. The culture back then as well was the lineage and the name was there was nothing more important. And he put the time in. Like, there's not many black belts under Hicks and Gracie. There's not many.
You're right.
He's one of them. And it's one thing being a black belt. It's another thing being a Hicks and black belt. So I get it.
You're right. I get it too. I had this conversation too with George, and I understood. I just told him, I said, George, maybe if you were less explosive, maybe. Yes, I remember, man. I remember George like hit the table, man. You know, and he called everybody out for a fight. You know.
And that's not your intention. Saying, yeah, that wasn't the intention. No, right. I get it.
You were saying, yeah, I change your guys' diapers, something like that. You know what I mean? Like, well, how come you guys come here to my house and talking about this shit? You know, I'm like, oh, shit, man.
This didn't go right. George, this didn't go how we planned.
George was like, at that time, George was out there, man. You know?
No. Well, I know we're in time constraints. In 10 minutes, you've got to teach another class. Professor Braga, what are we closing with? If you want our audience to maybe some knowledge or some words of wisdom, what would you say?
Man, I would say it. No matter what, keep training, man. Keep going forward. Don't stop what you're doing for anything that happens in a bad way. You know what I mean? Keep going. Just keep moving forward, you know? And I'm talking about, especially about jiu-jitsu, you know? If you train jiu-jitsu, in general, if you train everything, but I'm going to say about jiu-jitsu. I know some people are, sometimes their confidence is not too high, you know, and you're not doing well in training and everything. Don't give up, man. Keep going forward. Keep moving forward. And you won't regret, you know? Make sure you get the black belt. Make sure you finish. Like people say, oh, once you get the black belt, everything starts again. Yeah, it's true, you know, but get the black belt. Get there first, right? And be loyalty. Be loyal to your friends, to your teammates, to your coach, you know? My best friends, man, they are from the mats, you know? And that's why I'm glad, like, George is like a big brother for me, you know? I tell him this is like a father. He says, I'm not that old, you know? But... You know,
But he changed your diaper. Right.
Yes.
Right.
Yes. So be loyal to your coach, man. You know, represent him. And that's it. Keep moving forward.
So, Professor Braga, I mean, I know this took a long time for us to put together. We finally crossed that finish line. I cannot explain to you how appreciative I am of your contributions to so many people's lives. And thank you for coming on the program.
All right. Thank you, man. Great job what you're doing, you know, and keep doing. Same thing. Keep going forward, man.
I want Shembri. I want Shembri, sir.
I will. Don't worry. I'll remember. I'll talk to him, and then we'll get a call from him.
I appreciate it. Thank you, sir. Have a nice day.
Thank you so much, man.
So, ladies and gentlemen, that concludes, man, bro. Anytime we get the NHB era on here, it's just like it's a different type of interview. And if you like that one, dude, I'm saying dude because there's no women that listen to this. We've got about 100,000 downloads only from iTunes. We've only got 50 reviews. Man, you guys want to do me a solid? You say, hey, man, I really like the show. It's great. If you haven't left me a review, man, there's no need to say that. Like, really, you can send me all the messages in the world you want. But if you can't give me 30 seconds of your time to give me a 5-star review, whatever you write, I don't care what it is. If it's 5 stars, I promise you I'll read it. So if you guys can, you know, please do that. And also, like, the YouTube, I can't wrap my head with what's not happening there. But if you guys will leave just comments throughout the videos that you guys are doing, it helps us with the algorithm, one that is like forever pitted against us. It would greatly appreciate it too. And I'll continue getting interviews like this. My OCD doesn't allow me to stop, so we're never going to go away. We're just looking for a little respect. If you guys can do that for us, it's greatly, greatly appreciated. So with that, like, share, subscribe. We've got some really incredible guests right around the corner. Brandon the Truth Vera is on the line. Ivan Menjivar. Those are people that have committed. Those are just a few of the names that you're going to be able to look forward to in the very near future. Thank you.
Check out the full interview on iTunes, Spotify, and all major podcast platforms.